All right, let's get right to him there, Woody. Kyle Krabs, host of Locked On Fins and NFL analyst for A to Z Sports. Kyle, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Joe. How you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. And before we get to all this Dolphin stuff, I wanted to get your take on the story. Brandon Sorsby has decided to join the supplemental draft here that's coming up this month. Just curious what your thoughts are. And how good a player is he? I've heard different things, and where would he have been if he would have joined the draft last year?
Yeah, first of all, he's a really physically talented guy. He's a dual-threat quarterback with prototypical size, and he's got that big-time, like, electric off-schedule arm that can hit throws to all levels of the field. It was kind of up and down from a consistency standpoint. There's some frustrating stuff with the footwork and the accuracy and some decision-making stuff. So a lot of room for growth where I really thought the year at Texas Tech would have really been huge for him and his projection to the NFL level. But from a physical standpoint, from a physical skill standpoint, he's certainly more physically gifted than Ty Simpson, who went in the top 20 this year's NFL draft. And I think he would have had a legitimate chance to be a first-round pick next year had he been able to go through the year at Texas Tech. Now, what that means for how comfortable you are with what his conduct off the field is with the gambling and the gambling addiction, and addictions can be scary because it requires structure, and do you want that with a quarterback? Like, everybody's going to have their own answer, but I'm fascinated to find out who's willing to effectively silent auction bid the most for his services, because he has NFL starter physical ability.
Wow, that's a good way to start right there. We're going to be watching to see what somebody brought this up. I'm stealing it from somebody that sent it in this morning. The Cowboys got to be on top of that list to take a run at this guy, huh? Well, Jerry, sounds like a Jerry Jones special to me.
He certainly does, but you know, I stay in the NFC East as the Philadelphia Eagles with Jalen Hurts and his contract situation. And you know, they had given Carson Wentz a big-time contract and then found a cost-effective opportunity to draft Jalen Hurts and transition away from him. So they've kind of developed a reputation as one of those teams that can be a quarterback factory, if you will. And I think they're an interesting team to watch. There's some quarterback-hungry teams with extra draft capital like the Jets, the Browns. I think the Cardinals, with their quarterback situation after they missed out on Malik Willis, there's probably some desperation there. And if I were the Dolphins, there probably is a bid that I would place. I wouldn't make a desperate or overly aggressive bid, but there's probably a day three bid that I would place in the off chance that nobody else makes a bid, and then you could get another cost-effective at a quarterback.
All right, so I'm closing down the offseason after today, but we did get some news. I want to start with the Keon Smith thing. God bless the guy. Somehow he stayed around for 5 years. I practice squad, wave back, active roster, injury. He ended up, think about all the guys who were good players that he outlasted. It's incredible what he was able to do before they finally said, Keon, we're going to move on. It surprised you.
Surprised? Not really, because they haven't shown any ties to a lot of the quote-unquote pet projects or the guys that were developmental guys from the past regime. And, you know, as you said, you know, he's been around for a while, so you kind of know what he is and you know what kind of leaps that he's made or hasn't made as a player. And the tape that he put on last year when he got a chance to play at guard was not good. I don't think he's a guard. I don't think that staff did him any favors by playing him at guard. I think he's a tackle. But you kind of lost the appeal of Keon's whole appeal was small school player, physically underdeveloped, but very physically gifted and athletic for a big guy.
Yep.
Let's get him on the roster and develop him and see what happens. And that window's kind of closed, right? Like, as you said, it's been 5 years. So I'm not super surprised that that the grace period's run out and the new regime in here where there's no sweat equity with these guys.
I'm surprised he made it this long. I think that was a surprise for me. Hey, so Major Burns, 24-year-old, leads the UFL in interceptions, going to get a chance now, 6'2", 207 pounds, only 24 years old to make this team. And, boy, it's funny. We're talking about making up this 90-man roster. I did not even think of the offseason league at all. I didn't even give it any thought, and now he's going to have a chance to come in and he's going to have a chance to make this team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I had a chance to watch a couple of his games from his redshirt senior season at LSU yesterday. And they kind of felt like he was most successful as like a sub big safety linebacker, second level, not necessarily a deep guy, right? So I think that's what's interesting about the leap, perceived leap, or at least the production leap that you had in the spring league with the UFL after he didn't play last season. He signed with the Bears as a UDFA and had an injury settlement and didn't play last season, is the ball production. He had as many plays on the ball with 8 total passes defensed or intercepted in 9 games in the spring league as he had it in 5 years in college, right? So what was it about that opportunity? Was it just the level of competition? Did he go to a different scheme? He was at Georgia for 5 games as a true freshman and then 4 years at LSU. Was there something that happened there where it kind of helped the light bulb come on for him? He'll have a chance to come in and compete. I think the player he most similarly profiles to, based off the tapes that I watched at LSU, was probably the Ronnie Harrison type safety, big safety linebacker type. I think that's kind of the skill set I see most directly with what his college tape had.
All right, let's move it to Malik Willis, because people are still talking about him. Some have already made up their mind, because some of our people down here have really hyped up Quinn Ewers, and Quinn Ewers had a really nice camp, really, really nice off season so far. The Malik Willis thing, first of all, Austin Jackson needs to play right tackle, and he needs to be healthy when this thing starts back up in late July. Second of all, I want to ask you about Malik Willis and everything that guys, they're writing a lot of negative stuff or have already decided that he's not going to work out. Does he have enough from what we've seen with Jalen Tolbert, Malik Washington, Tutu Atwell? We got a couple rookies and Douglas and Coleman. I don't know. And then Bobby Slowick putting everybody in the right position and getting the best out of everybody. I do believe that your running back and your tight end are going to be 1-2 in targets and receptions when it's all said and done. This is a way too early prediction that Achane and Dulcich will be 1-2. What will we get, and do we have enough out of that wide receiver room for Malik to have success?
Well, I think you have enough to be able to assess him. Now, I think if you just assess him on the – because I would include the entire offense with what you're projecting the offensive line and the run game and the tight end room to be. There will be games where you're kind of outgunned at wide receiver versus other teams' opposing corners, and those will be tough. But you could still grade the decision-making. You could still grade the placement on the throws, whether or not the catch is made. I think the worst thing you can do is get to January this year and turn around and look at the box score and let that be your judge of what Malik Willis is or is not as a player. Because I think there will be an opportunity for the play to maybe be better than the raw production because of the overall conditions of, you know, where this roster still needs reinforcements and to grow. But it does make it a much more complicated evaluation than a guy coming in and having all the toys in the world to be able to throw to, where you're like, look, he's got everything he needs.
Yeah. So the other part of this thing is, and you and I have talked about this, the sacks, the pressures, the edge rushers, and Chop and Uche, guys that have had some success, not enough, but some success. Where do we get it without blitzing? Who else do you put on a list if we just, because you can't just blitz every down. Yeah. You got to rush four sometimes. Where do we get, where is there potential production on the outside? What am I missing?
Well, I don't know necessarily how much of it will come from the outside, right? But that's where I think about a team like, this is an extreme example. Nobody get mad that I'm going to invoke the Super Bowl champions here, but the Seattle Seahawks, they had a couple of defensive tackles that had 7 sacks apiece last season.
Yeah.
And they were both big time pressure guys. And I think that's, for me, like, if you're going to have more success up front, I think you've got more upside to tap into. Now, Chop's got plenty of physical upside for what he's physically capable of being. But if you're removing him from the list, I kind of look at the inside and think, all right, well, like, can Zach Sealer regain some of the 24 and 23 form when he had double-digit sacks? And will Kenneth Grant take a leap forward? Those are the two guys that I look at, and I think there's a very clear and potentially realistically attainable growth and leap for what you had last year. So, and that's right in the quarterback's face, right? Like, in some ways, that can be very valuable because that pressure is inside. It's a more direct path to the quarterback. And, you know, you just have to play with good chemistry, and you have to be able to let those guys really get aggressive and go. And you got to have a cohesive rush plan. And I'm sure that's the kind of stuff that they're all working on.
Well, listen, it's not like our head coach isn't aware of all these things. There's also a good chance we go large outside and we play some of those guys on the outside to help. And I'm with you. Inside to get Sealer going again and get him at 8, 9, 10 sacks would be a big help for this whole thing. I want to ask you about Chris Bell. Now we got people again playing doctors. We shouldn't play doctors. And when he's healthy, I'd like to see him back for November, sometime in November. That puts him at what, 7, 8, 9 months, whatever it would be at that point, to give him a chance to be completely healthy. But if there's a chance he can play, I want him to play. I don't want him to sit out all season. How do you feel about Chris Bell just telling him someone to just have him sit out the rest of this year and not play?
Yeah. I don't know that anybody, anybody on this roster gets like the, well, we'll just redshirt you, or we'll just take the year off, right? Like, you're too important. We don't want to burn a year where we're not going to be very good or anything like that. Like, and they don't think that way, right? But I think anybody who has a chance to play, you got to evaluate everything. I mean, what if you have concerns at wide receiver and then Chris Bell comes in and lights it up on the back half of the season? You feel a little bit better about what your need is at wide receiver.
That's a great point. Yes.
Your free agency plan, or how early you prioritize it in the draft. And so you got to take every rep and snap that you can for every player. If they're physically cleared to play, you got to play them. Like, that's what this whole year is about assessing what you have and seeing what guys take leaps. And if a guy is medically cleared to play, I don't think you can justify not ramping him up and seeing how he operates in the film room and how he translates that to the practice field and then how that goes to the game.
And then we get to our coordinators. Big year for them to get the most out of these guys. Put them in a situation, find out what every guy can do. I'm sure they've already got a plan, even off drafting some of these guys and knowing what they can and can't do. But huge, huge year for play calling on both sides of the football. Would you agree with that, to get the most out of this group and stay competitive?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, obviously the defense with Jeff Hafley, there will be a big-time influence from the head coach there. For Bobby Slowick, you mentioned him earlier, and we mentioned the wide receiver room. I do think it's interesting. It's something I talked about a little earlier this week on Locked On Dolphins. But Bobby Slowick, you go back to his first year as an offensive coordinator in Houston when C.J. Stroud was a rookie. They had three of their six receivers were guys that had never played an NFL snap before. Nico Collins was going into year three and had 70 catches in his first two seasons combined. And Noah Brown was a 6-year vet with less than 1,000 career receiving yards in 6 seasons. That's 5 of the 6 guys in the wide receiver room for Houston. So he's got a little bit of experience with an inexperienced group and an inexperienced quarterback and how to manage that. And that doesn't mean that the Dolphins passing offense is or is not going to be as successful as Houston was that year, where I think they were top 8 in passing yards when it was all said and done. But at least the familiarity with the situation is something that I think can be helpful as Bobby tries to work through how to put these guys in their best positions.
So if I'm just working by offseason, Kevin Coleman was one of the best rookies of everybody. I thought he not only wore some sharp shoes, but he looked smooth. He looked real smooth out there. Caleb Douglas, I don't know enough about at this point, but I know they really like him, obviously, by where they drafted him. And again, if you come back and you know what you're doing, and I was really excited to find out a lot of those rookies are still down here doing stuff in the community So it tells me they're around, and that means they're still getting educated on everything to do with the playbook here, which is so important. What would be your goal for Caleb Douglas, who they took in the third round? Big receiver that can run.
Yeah, I think that's I go back to the skill set that, you know, the Packers offenses and John Eric Sullivan, you know, they drafted a player like this almost 10 years ago now, and he's carved out a very specific role, and that's Marquez Valdes-Scantling with the Packers, and a vertical guy. Like, you know, are you going to run a lot of quick game with Caleb Douglas? Probably not. He's a big, tall, leggy guy with high hips, but he's got a really explosive drive down the field and can threaten you vertically. So I don't think the recipe for him to be successful is getting 100 targets per se. You know, I think the role that he plays is helping to attack vertically and create space. And when you get opportunities down the field, make the most of them. So you're getting a lot of production per target, even if your targets per game is not exceptionally high. That's one of those, you get to kind of get up to the line of scrimmage and, you know, the guy on the outside, he's got a big post or a go, right? It's like, hey, if we get the right coverage look, I'll take that shot. But if we don't get the right coverage look, he's got to run that and create space so I can work the progression.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the kind of role that ideally Caleb Douglas's skill set can help him play fast this season.
You know, it's funny because I look at Green Bay's numbers. They just had a whole bunch of guys. Nobody got a lot of targets. They just spread it out with four or five guys, 30 plus catches up.
Yep.
And yep. And spread out. And by the way, that could be one more thing. Kind of torn on this, and maybe too much old school. And I do understand that. That damn Kim Bocamper's done some of this to me. But so our head coach going to put a lot into those one-on-one practices with other teams that we're going to have, the couple we're going to have, and less in the preseason where he's not going to play the guys that he knows will be starters as much. I was hoping they'd play more, but I get it. You still want your guys healthy when the season rolls around. What do you think about those comments about playing your starters one quarter in each game?
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting the way that he talked about how he doesn't like the second joint practice. That was the biggest thing that I took away from everything that Coach Halfley said. I really liked that.
I did, you know, too.
Everybody remembers what happened in Detroit and Chicago last summer, right? Where, you know, the Dolphins didn't practice well on the first day. It became a big thing. And then you're pressing the second day. And so I really enjoyed that perspective from Jeff Halfley. And it seems like he's got, there's details and there's a purpose behind a lot
of decisions. There is. You're right about
that. So as long as that's the case, you know, just have the why, and then, you know, we can judge how well the team plays in the first 2-3 weeks of the season, and, you know, then we can kind of call it as, hey, maybe we change it moving forward. You know, Coach Halfley, one thing I really appreciate him is he's as he's done the media tour and been asked questions, he's like, perfectly fine and comfortable saying, yeah, you know, we probably in hindsight, maybe I would have done this differently, or maybe I would have done that differently. So we'll see if that sticks. And if it doesn't, maybe that tells us what they thought about that process when they put it into action.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I've been telling everybody, I think they're going to play a ton in preseason when to have all those young guys try to catch up and get ready to go for that Raiders game. And he's going to do it a little bit differently. Hey, Kyle, thank you, man. I really appreciate you coming on.
Of course, Joe. Good talking with you.
All right. Kyle Krabs, host of Locked On Fins, NFL analyst for A to Z Sports.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so I got to do this. And our podcasters, our Dolphin podcasters, and everybody else, look, they've got about 5 weeks. Got about 5 weeks, what would you say? Roughly five, maybe almost 6 weeks, where the players are off and coaches are on vacation. And so now, and it's called jump the gun on what you saw, but it also is you got to fill some space. But some of you, and I don't want to go at it with the whole quarterback thing again between the two guys, because it's not up for debate on the two guys who are going to be your one and two quarterbacks. Everybody else, Quinn Ewers and Malik Willis, the two guys I'm talking about. And Malik Willis, the new guy, Quinn Ewers here, and Quinn had a really, really good camp. He did. And Malik had mostly good camp, but he threw a couple of picks in there that I saw, and I wasn't there at every practice during the OTAs and the mini camps. But so I was going through Dolphin News just to check, and I see like concerns about Malik Willis, and I go, ooh, okay. So off of OTAs and mini camp again, where you're doing everything, you're seeing everything. And listen, I could see some things that he's got to work on with the new offense and not looking down receivers and some things. But the panic button, if that's what this is coming out of camp, out of, again, OTAs and mini camps. I don't know what the total amount of practices was, roughly, what was it, 10, 12, whatever, total days. Just jumping the gun a little bit on this Malik Willis thing. Learning the offense. And there's no question, he was back there in either one of two things. He was either waiting for somebody to get open and he didn't like it, or he wasn't sure where to go with the ball. And a couple guys on the outside, we had one-to-one, he zeroed in on who he wanted to throw to, which is a big no-no to let your eyes. Those safeties will just suck that ball right down if you start looking where you're going to throw it. So I'm not saying it's perfect, but, man, this should be a conversation we're having about 2 weeks into camp in summer, or 3 weeks into camp when we start getting into practices with other teams, which – we're finding out are going to be very important, or the first quarter of games where Malik is going to play, the first quarter of the preseason games. But man, I just calmed down a little bit here before we start deciding. And it was all Malik Willis. There was no mention of, you know, the receivers, and, you know, we got to get some guys to get open and hold on to the ball and those things. It was just about Malik not doing it. And the other thing is, when we start and we put pads on and it all counts, he's got a weapon that we haven't had here. It's not a shot that we haven't had here in the last 5 or 6 years. We have not had here. And that is a quarterback that can take off and keep plays alive when things break down and you're man-to-man down the field, and a guy can get outside the pocket and take off and run for 20 yards. Hell, we haven't had a guy here could run for a first down, whether it's 2 yards or 5 yards or 8 yards, and it's not a shot. It's a fact. You can look at the numbers. So before we decide that Malik Willis is not going to be very good or there's concern, I get it, man. I would have loved to have had him come in here and look like it has with the two guys we just had running around. We got a little spoiled with unbelievable. I mean, people are coming to camp and Tyreek Hill is running by everybody, and like it was the greatest. 3 years ago, when Tyreek Hill put up the big numbers, was that his first year? Maybe 3 years ago. When he got here, it was the most impressive camp I've ever seen. I've never seen a guy dominate camp like Tyreek Hill's here. Been going to these forever. Been going since 1980 when we were running around. I have never, even with the guys I played with, I've never seen a guy running wide open all over the field like Tyreek Hill. And I don't mean by a step. I remember he's playing against the Eagles. We're in for a practice. I think it was the Eagles. And he tells the guy, he's bump and run to start one-on-one drills. He says, I'm going to run right by you, man. And he did, you know, makes adjustments And by the way, the guy on the other side who we traded, Waddle, another guy, had his moments where he just dominated practices too. So we don't have that. We don't have that right now. So not everything's going to be perfect when you lose all this money. A lot of it's tied together. I still believe Malik's going to do a lot of good things, but I'm at least going to wait and see. Now, listen, man, if he plays poorly, I'm not going to come in and try to sell you a bill of goods like, oh, don't pay attention to what you saw in the game against the Raiders. No, that's what we're all watching, man. Or, hey, he played in, a little concern last game in preseason, and he didn't look real comfortable. And then we start talking about this stuff.
That'd be very concerning, by the way, if he's not the guy, like if he can't play and he's just running around out there and looks lost.
No, I would agree.
It would be very, very concerning because they have, they vouched for this guy, right?
They went all in on him. Yes. Yeah. They came in almost with him. It was almost like the three of them. There was just a little break, right? The GM and then the head coach. And then here comes the quarterback. And they go, yeah, we knew that was our guy.
Yep. They made a big offer.
No question. But you can't decide what he looks like in OTAs and minicamp.
No.
And by the way, there's been a lot of guys, including 13, that would try something and try to rip one in and try to make a guy look bad between the safety and the corner. I mean, guys sow picks in practice. They're trying things, And again, I know Malik wasn't trying to throw any picks. Didn't see some guys probably. I don't know if a guy broke the wrong way, but he's got to keep working on the timing, which is part of the article too. You got to keep working on the timing. Malik's got a pretty good idea who he's going to be throwing to. I got a pretty good idea. It's just a matter of how quickly the Kevin Colemans and some of those guys can get caught up. And then obviously also Bell, if he can play in the second half of the season, would be huge. I don't know if they've made a decision. I know they have made a decision on whether he's going to play in the second half of the year or not. I mean, that's going to be a decision made by the doctors at Baptist Health, along with the trainers, and then the head coach will have to decide on what he hears. But I'm guessing they want to try to get him out there for 2 months at least of the season. Love to get him out there for the last 8 games if they could. Hey, we got 7 o'clock hour coming up here, man. We got all kinds of stuff. I got to tell you, man, I'm not a New York fan, but I really like this. This team was easy to like. The New York Knicks and Jalen Brunson and the rest of the teammates were really easy to like. The way they talked, the way they played as a team, just incredible, incredible run they went on. One of the best we've seen. End up winning that series in 5 games, and just a great road team as well. Had to come back. It seemed double digit in every friggin' game, and just had so much confidence doing it with one of the clutch players we've ever seen, and Jalen Brunson and his 45 points. We'll have more on that coming up here. But before we do, and we get into the second coffee that I just poured myself. Sorry about that, Woody. Took a little while to get that thing going.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
You saw this news about Soresby?
That he's going in a supplemental?
Yeah, so it looked obviously like there were teams saying that if Brendan Soresby is the quarterback, like we're not even going to play them. And so now he's coming out in the supplemental draft. The reason I bring it up is there's possibility that he ends up with the Dolphins. We had that conversation with Zach Gelb last week or the week before where he said to you, what would it be worth to you to get a quarterback like him? And I think your answer was what? A second rounder?
Second round. He is first round talent is all I saw today when I was reading stuff.
So I was looking at betonline.ag and they say the last quarterback drafted in the supplemental draft, third rounder better, was Terrell Pryor by the Raiders. So the odds right now for Soresby to go in the third round is 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
Next highest is undrafted at 7-2. Then the second round, 4-1, fourth round, 4-1, first round, 5-1. So odds on favorite right now, according to BetOnline, would that he would go in the third round.
And I've heard that he was going to be in the talks with all the first round. This is supposed to be one of the best quarterback drafts since Marino and Montana and them boys in the 80s. If you can go get him with a third rounder, why not?
And then
the gambling thing, though. So now the gambling thing, quickly, the gambling thing is something new. Because now you can gamble online and he was putting all them bets up, but how do we look at that? We look at it like a addiction, like drugs.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's. I mean, that's one of the hot button issues, right? With any sports league, is the integrity of the game, and this guy was betting on his own games.
Yeah.
So,
and that was the thing. If he wasn't bet, that's the thing with Pete Rose. If you're betting for a year to win, Hulk, I wish I could bet for us to win when I was playing, but if you're betting unders and all of that stuff, like, and he said he went to rehab, he had a problem, but how much do you put on that? How much can he overcome that addiction? Because he is a very talented quarterback.
So odds on BetOnline, Brendan Sorsby's next team, New York Jets 3-1, Cardinals 5-1, Dolphins 6-1.
I wouldn't be mad either. You get a first round talent, a third round pick. That's good business.
First round talent. We don't.
I mean, with any draft pick, you're thinking.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be mad.
But isn't the idea this season for the Miami Dolphins? Here's the only thing that I struggle to kind of wrap my head around. The idea this year is obviously not to be the worst team, but ultimately, because of the situation of the roster, the expectation is the Dolphins will be selecting decently high in the upcoming draft, right? Like top five, top 10, probably, most likely. Won't they go quarterback there?
Well, maybe their plan, though, was, hey, we'll get a quarterback next season. We think Brendan Sorsby will probably be available, and that would be our guy. And what if all of a sudden your guy becomes available now in the supplemental draft? So you go, okay, well, if we were going to take him at the end of the season, hoping that we'd end up with a high enough draft pick to get him, because maybe you say to yourself, hey, we're not epically bad. We're not going to end up with Arch Manning. We don't think that we're going to end up 2-15. And so who else would we target? You know, you just don't know. Everything is a crapshoot, right? I mean, they went through this with a team that they thought was off. I mean, they ended up with Tua. They ended up with the fifth pick. But I don't know. If somebody falls into your lap who you already had coveted, maybe you pull the trigger.
And just think about it. Everything is an evaluation right now. Like, we're hearing right now, like, Quinn Ewers is outplaying Malik Willis on some practices. So Malik, he's only started 6 games. He is a project. Quinn Ewers is a project. Sorsby will now be a project. If you can look at those guys every day at practice and be like, nah, I don't think that's the guy, and we still are one of the worst 3 teams, now we got a chance at Arch Manning. Like, we have to find it. We know we have to find a quarterback, bro. Keep swinging at quarterbacks until you hit one out the park.
Unless you hit one out the park with Malik Willis, and then all of a sudden you can just build around him.
Yeah. If Malik's the guy, that would be the best thing in the world.
We'll find out.
Later in the show, but a weird one. It just keeps, the story just continues. So besides the supplemental NFL draft that he's going to jump into, and there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to throw a draft pick in there and try to get him by how high the draft pick is and a combination of also how bad your team was last year. And we'll find out what the NFL thinks of him. Seems like a lot of people think he's got everything. He's big physical guy. He's athletic. He can run, threw a lot of touchdowns at Cincinnati. But this story just, so now he comes out and says, oh, by the way, Texas Tech told me that I couldn't play here. So after all that stuff, Texas Tech, all the videos that came out, the Homer judge that ruled in their favor, and everything else, they got a little heat from the NCAA and the Big 12, and they go, we can't do this. This is crazy. You got to turn pro. So he said, yeah, Texas Tech told me, you know, I was done here. I couldn't play. And that wasn't even the strangest one. Now his agent, Brandon Sorsby's agent, comes out and says, yeah, Cincinnati, where he played the two previous years, knew he had a gambling problem and didn't say anything about it. Oh, God. Why? And here's a weird one, because all these teams are going to be calling Cincinnati head coach and all the guys around there. They're going to go do their homework. The guy's serious, because if you're taking him, you think he's got a chance to be a franchise quarterback, not a backup quarterback. Everybody's looking for the next franchise quarterback. And a lot of teams keep looking and looking and looking. And hell, we may be one of them. So this thing's out there. Your agent decides he's going to badmouth Cincinnati, knowing that they're going to visit. And why would you do that? Why would you want to piss anybody off at Cincinnati with your client, knowing that the NFL is going to be checking in with the head coach and down with people around to find out how bad the problem was? They're not going to Texas Tech. He got there and he said, I got a problem. I signed my deal with you, my NIL deal, but I got some problems I need to take care of. My gambling is out of control. So anyway, and then other people are saying, well, Cincinnati had to know. Nobody could have that bad a gambling problem and keep it secret, where somebody, a graduate assistant coach, a player, somebody wouldn't say, this dude's got a problem.
I think the problem he's got is his agent.
Yeah, I think it's just stupid.
You know, it's just funny, because nobody would have been talking about him today or yesterday had his agent not have gone on the radio. What do you get from doing that?
I don't know.
What are you trying to boost him publicly? Like, what do you think, NFL GMs are listening to that station?
By the way, it's not Cincinnati's problem if he did have a gambling problem. If he did have it, like, I appreciate, wow. Like, what are you going to blame them? Like, that he has these addiction problems? If we were to do that, we'd be blaming a lot of people, a lot of different businesses, yeah, and companies. If, like, well, it's your fault, he's got an addiction.
Well, if they knew it's a problem, but.
Well, they're saying, well, what do you think? They came right out and said, this is a joke. Who's ever coming out with this is a joke. Who's ever saying this?
Of course they're going to say that. What else are they going to say? You think they're going to come out and be like, yeah, we knew. We just thought Texas Tech, it could be their problem.
We just wanted to win. Yeah. We just wanted to keep winning games, man. You know how this works. Hey, hang in there with your addiction. We're going to help you. But right now, we're worried about these games. So get your ass in here. You can worry about putting those bets out tonight. But for now, nobody knows. Let's keep going. We got this thing rolling.
Yeah, I think a statement from them goes, people have done far worse to win college football games. Like,
I don't know.
They're not going to admit to it.
I don't know, Woody, but you can't. You're insinuating that they're guilty.
I'm not insinuating they're guilty.
That's what you're saying. You know,
like, obviously they're going to deny those allegations. But for the agent to go out and do these interviews is stunningly stupid.
Yeah, like, just let it all go. The guys come clean. We don't have to do a history lesson in how long. We can go back to his high school coach and go, did you know he was gambling too? Because he got to Indiana, he was gambling. Yeah, I've been betting since I'm 12.
The story went away for a few days too, which is the funny part. And then this guy got the call.
He also came out and said Texas Tech told him it's done here. Can you imagine walking in after all this?
I don't know what's true. Do you believe that? You believe that part of it?
Yeah, I believe Brandon Swordsby got the word from Texas Tech. It's done, bro.
After all that,
I know.
After all they did to save face, and
we got a little war going here, and they just threw up some bigger cannons on us.
Maybe they just told him, "Hey, we're not going to win this fight."
Yeah, that's part of it.
Right? Like, I don't think I don't think they were going to win. You had some schools and conference that was pissed. And
that's part of what I'm saying.
They were going to sanction his ass, and
they were threatening federal government. They were threatening everything.
Attorney generals are fighting in different states. It's Very, what a bizarre story.
I don't know, but somebody finally said at Texas Tech, hey, let him go. Got to let him go. Tell him. Who's making the call? Why don't we have our AD, since he said all those nice things about taking care of the student athletes here, let him.
Someone said on the text, I bet you 2-1 the Dolphins don't pick Sorsby. So he's giving us good odds.
I'm curious how high a pick you go. Again, you're
well, but this is the problem. We don't know, you know, how great he's going to be in the pros. I don't know what kind of prospect they view him as.
You got a pretty good idea. You've heard what everybody said about him before they knew.
Yeah, but the problem too, though, is like usually when a guy's going into the draft, you get the whole draft process. You get all the combine and the pro day and all the other good stuff.
I think somebody's going to throw in some supplemental third round picks. That's
well, how high would you go? Assuming you want him.
I don't want him, but if okay. I did, you probably, if it was somebody.
You don't want him because of the gambling issue?
Yeah.
What if he can play?
Great.
What if he's the Kyle? Kyle said he's a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
Or no, could be.
Could be. No. He. By the way, every team that's going to take him thinks he. Well, you think they're going to take him? They think he can be the third quarterback on the team? They're going, hey, we got our third guy. Give up that pick. No, they think. You're drafting a quarterback with somebody saying he's got – we haven't seen it yet, but he's got potential to be his makeup, his – you know, he's got a chance to be a franchise quarterback. That's what everybody said. Just think about all the people who have said that and been wrong year after year after year after mm-hmm. year. Guys are supposed to be the smartest guys in the world in professional sports. They sit down together. They sit with quarterback coaches. They sit – they bring in all these consultants. They go, what do you think? And they go, this could be the guy right here in the right system. And look at, what is it, 50-50?
Well, we've 50-50 been looking,
with yeah, these top guys?
We've been looking for a quarterback for a really long time. And I don't, you know, no offense to Malik Willis, but he's unproven at best.
Yeah.
So.
They think.
I would do whatever it took to get a franchise quarterback.
I will tell you,
though,
they think. He's got a chance to be a friend. He's one of those guys we're talking about. They think he's got. And you go out there and you watch him make a sidearm throw, or you see the big arm. He's got a huge arm, clearly the best arm. I mean, he's got a cannon for an arm, and he can run. But you're right. They think it's – we think he's got a chance, and Green Bay's like, man, we've all looked at, we've watched it up close. We've met the parents. We know everything about him. We know, you know, in Green Bay, you get where you know everything about everybody. We think he's got a chance. So we're going to find out.
Somebody said no good players have ever come from the supplemental draft.
That's not true.
That is not true. Bernie Kosar was in the supplemental draft. Chris Carter.
Erickson.
Craig nice
Erickson.
Guy.
Craig Erickson was down here, was a good quarterback.
Brian Bosworth, Terrell Pryor, Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon was
Josh
incredible.
Gordon, Josh Gordon was either... When he played, he was one of the best, or he was out of the game.
Josh Gordon was the guy that like you would take every year in the fantasy draft, like in the mid rounds, because you would just hope that he played,
right?
Because he could go for 2,000 yards
yeah,
easily.
No, he was
like in his sleep.
He was physically freakish. I didn't realize Chris Carter was a supplemental draft guy. I didn't know that, and he had his own demons going on in his. Things going on with Chris, but whatever it was, but he ended up being a Hall of Fame. I mean, there have been guys that worked out. Going in the history of the game, there have been guys that have worked out.
So but, 501 said some team ought to take this guy after all by leaving school. He's betting on himself.
That's good.
I wouldn't have any issue with this whatsoever if the Dolphins want to roll the dice here.
They might, Woody. I can't speak on their behalf. They might be thinking a lot of teams – A lot of people in the NFL think we're the one of the teams that's going to be looking. We're looking all over for a guy that's got a chance to be that guy.
And well, is Malik Willis the guy, Joe? Can you tell me with 100% certainty that he's your franchise quarterback?
That. They don't know that.
I don't even think the Dolphins front office knows that. I think they think that.
Yeah, well, they think that. That's just like the guys that are getting ready to take him in a supplemental draft. They think he might have a chance. They don't know. How many guys you want to go through this? We can go through this with how many surefire guys have been where you looked and
there's
go.
There's no such thing.
Well, there have been a couple.
Who?
John Elway.
Okay. Who is the next one? Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck?
Not the best career, certainly.
Didn't play Andrew Luck? Long.
He quit. Didn't want to play anymore.
That's weak. When he was playing.
You think Mendoza's a sure thing?
No. Joe Burrow? I felt pretty good when Joe Burrow came out that he was going to be good.
But there's still no sure
thing. I'll tell you another guy.
No sure things.
There's another guy. There's been some guys who are sure. A lot of people thought Peyton Manning was going to be a sure shot.
Mm-hmm.
First overall pick, he was.
Yeah, but for all those sure shot guys, there's a bust right next to him.
I know that. We're just talking about, you asked me if there were sure shots, and I agree. I'm not disagreeing. You always have to add that extra piece to it to make your point. Okay, we're just talking about sure shot guys. Some of the first overall picks have been, look like first overall picks, and going to bad teams. You know, that can neutralize everything when you're the first overall guy and you look really good. And you're on a really, really bad team.
Well, yeah, we had a quarterback from here that had that experience last season. Cam.
Yeah, that's a great
example. To a terrible team.
Yeah.
He's, by the way, the favorite to have a breakout year. Every website loves
him. Have you read the latest stuff, though, that he's having trouble completing passes right now, and they're telling everybody they're not worried about it?
Oh, what, in OTAs?
Yeah, well, that's what everybody's,
well,
come on, OTAs and
minicamps. So, you know.
All right, we're going to break here there before I get to any more of your sarcasm this morning. Man, you're into that.
Everyone's talking about that video they put out yesterday, that five-second video of him throwing a ball high
to
his receiver. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears, and I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.